morning and welcome to The Third Degree. My name's Tessa Dowdell.
And I'm Jessica Minchell. Last month, we travelled to Mpantwe Alice Springs for the Defending Indigenous Rights Land, Law and Culture Gathering.
This week, you'll hear the second in our series of reports on issues affecting communities in the Northern Territory, with a special focus today on uranium.
Uranium, then they researched uranium and the effects of nuclear energy. Very, very, very horrendous effects on mankind. Yet they want to continue to use it, to continue to put it and use it as an excuse that it's going to be there and it's going to do good for us. To use, continue to use nuclear power is wrong. They should stop uranium mining. It should stop.
I sit reminiscing in the midst of regret, trying to hold on every chance I get. I know sometimes that I seem to forget, and I hear your voice, don't give up yet. So I don't, and I try my best to release this pain deep inside my chest. Oh no, please don't let me go next. Please, Lord, don't let my soul to rest. And I search these streets and hope that I find a better version of myself. And I smell defeat in the air. Sometimes I wish I was someone else. It's like my heart versus my soul versus my head. I heard your voice is what it said.
Margie Lynch, Arundel woman from Hearts Range.
Before being elected to government, the Federal Labor Party scrapped its Three Mines policy, a 25-year Labor stance against new uranium mines in Australia.
Now, Labor is continuing a policy plan to transport and dump radioactive waste in the Northern Territory.
We'll hear today from Aboriginal women from all over the country who are affected by the mining, transportation and waste from toxic uranium.
And we'll go first to Diane Stokes, Muckaty Land Trust member and Yuppie Yuppa Elder.
Yeah, hello everyone. I'm Diane Muckaty Stokes. I'm from Warrigal Wurundjeri Tribe. I've been struggling so long about the waste dump and talking to people about it. It was a very sad time when I heard it. I had tears in my eyes. I cried for my people. They fought very hard to get their land. And it is very sad because it's in my heart. I feel it today. I can feel the spirits. And I know it's very hard to talk to these government people, really. They're not listening. And the other thing I wanted to say, it only came from one person who said yes. There was two, but one said yes, the loudest, and her sister behind her said, yes, we'll support that. There was only two people that gave yes to the minister, to the government, to put the waste dump in the land. And they knew about the land. They knew that our people fought very hard to get their land back. How long have they been struggling to get the land back? And it's very hard. And now I know I've fought hard, but like I say, with all my hearts, I will not stop, even though I have tears in my eyes, but I will stay here for the children very strong to help my people who fought very hard. And this is true. It's very sad, because I've been telling my people, talking to my people, telling them about it. And And I had support lately from my elders coming towards me to help me and backing me up to talk to these people. And at the time when I done that, I spoke out to the medias, told them that there was only two people who said yes, along with their people, their kids, which I wasn't allowed to talk for my mother's country. And that country that these two people gave away, it's my mother's land. It's my mother's father's land. And that's the land that they use. Like in my language, I say, that's for your land. That's for men's side. Okay? And it's a very strong law for that country that they're given away. That's why we keep on telling them to. And they said, one lady said, the first woman who said yes, she came in and said, I want the money. I want to sell my country for the money. That is not her country. I've told the government. I've spoken out in medias, on radios, to tell Martin Ferguson about the country. That is not her land. And that is true. Because I was told by my people and by my elders, the one of the people who knows the country, they walked the country, they drank water from the soldiers, they went and collected bush tucker, they cooked in bush, in the ground, to make food for themselves. They made wheat, they got the wheat to make flowers and cook their own feed. And we call it Narlin. That's the bush wheat. They cooked it. And I know my people have been right through. And that country means to us, it's a very spiritual country. And I'm standing here, I have tears in front of you people. I'm not being shame or anything. I'm here to tell you people that what I went through. And I'm standing here with all my hearts to tell you that I'm bright enough to say something about the land. I want to be still very strong to tell the government, the new government we've got now, if she's not listening, if anyone's not listening, we have to go out there and do the dancing. We have to do the dancing. So if we're doing that, we are inviting everyone to come. Community. Every time I walk on the floor, it's like I'm going to fall through. You've got white ants getting into it. I went and spoke to the resource mall, Aboriginal Resource Centre, where they look after communities. You have to pay your rent. I have to pay my rent. And I said, look, this is emergency. I can pay my rent afterwards. When I moved into the house, it was all no. So I said, I'm not paying nothing. I need you people to fix that house up. But today it's going more and more worse. So I have to remove my stuff. I'm not going back to that house, that bush. I'm staying in the Humpy. If I'm not getting any house in town, I'll stay in the Humpy. I'll go back to where I was living when I was little with my people. And I will always remain that way. And that really hurt me. That's why I went back, because I thought about the waste I'm coming into the land. I want to show people how I live, how my people lived. I don't cook in a stove. I'll cook on the ground. I'll cook my food in the ground by putting a lid over it, an iron sheet. That's what we call mungwa. That's what I do. I'll cook my dampa in the cold, and I use for it. I know what I've been doing. I've been watching my old people when I was young. That's taking me back. And this is honest. And Natalie, Penny, they come out to my block. They see me stay out there. Before I had the Humpy, I had bushes, sleeping right near the bushes. I never went in an Ansari house, and I just had to cover myself with a calco, with a tarp, sleep underneath. The rain fall there, you got flood water coming underneath. Didn't worry. And my auntie here, she comes out, visits me out there. You know, I'm out there. I don't want to go back to her house or my other auntie's house. I want to stay out there. Because the country out there really hurts me. It's my grandfather's country. And I'm standing here to tell you people how I feel. And today, this is what I wanted to give a presentation today to let you all know about the waste dump. We fought very hard. But that won't stop me. Mm-hmm. I will be still fighting very hard. Yeah. My mouth, my tongue will be speaking for my people and for my grandfather's country. Because I'm one of the Gurungalu of that country. I have brothers and sisters, cousin brothers and sisters. They will not talk about the country because they don't know anything about it. If you're Gurungalu, you get out there and help your people. That's what I do. I said, I'll step in there. I'll be the first person to step in there. And what do I do when the time comes for their royalties? I don't get nothing. I don't get anything out of it. The people who don't speak, they all get it. Like, I want to put money towards the country, the community. That's not happening. You got all the people there, all lining up with their account numbers. And that makes me really mad. Where are they to speak up for that country where they're getting that money, for that line, for that totem that went through there? It's not happening. They're not listening to nobody. They just want to be like their government people. I'm talking about my people, but that's going to be me sorting that out. Talking about government again, not listening to for the traditional owners, about the waste dump. So I'm going to step forward now. This is my true story. I will say there is a challenge in waiting. So I will be dancing to show the designs of the country. Yes. So we'll be doing that. Yes. And that's all I wanted to talk. Thank you.
Thank you, Diane. And just to be clear, when I was speaking before about money being offered for essential services, the deal with Makati, because it's not a Commonwealth site like the other three sites, was that traditional owners were offered $12 million, not as cash, $1 million as an education scholarship fund for kids to go to school, and $11 million split by however many people over hundreds of years to provide roads, houses, and basic infrastructure. Do we expect that in the cities? Should people expect that outpush? Absolutely.
And you're listening to part two of the Defending Indigenous Rights, Land, Law and Culture Special Reports, here on the Third Degree at 2SER. You were just listening to Diane Stokes, Yappa Yappa Elder, speaking about the proposed nuclear waste dump at Muckaty Station near Tennant Creek in the Northern Territory.
But we need to trace that waste back to its source to understand just how destructive the entire nuclear chain is at every stage. Gillian Marsh, Annamutna woman from South Australia, talks here about her experiences fighting the Beverley uranium mine.
And to introduce her is Natalie Wosley from the Arid Lands Environment Centre, who chaired this forum.
I'm going to jump back down south geographically and back to the start of the nuclear chain with our next speaker. Gillian Marsh is an Annamutna woman currently living and working in Alice Springs. She spent many years working with her very strong family and community to resist the Beverley and now the Beverley 4-mile uranium projects in South Australia. And Gillian actually wrote and very recently submitted her PhD on the dodgy consultation process that happened between her community and Heathgate Resources to push the Beverley mine to go ahead. So please welcome Gillian Marsh.
Hello, good evening everybody. Yeah, I come from the Northern Flinders Ranges in South Australia. It's borderline desert country. It has beautiful Rocky Mountain ranges. It has dry, open, barren country. It has dry salt lakes. And for the white fellas, for the Wunyus, to them, this represents wasteland because it's semi-arid, it's desert, it's got salt water. You can't drink the water above the ground or below it. So to them, what's it good for? Well, as we all know, it's good uranium country. There's plenty of it. But that's not where I want to start tonight. I want to start by talking a little bit about what that country was to me when I was a kid growing up, when I was a Yuriyakati. I can remember when I was a kid, we used to go out and we'd pick up my mum's father, my grandfather, and we'd take him out to go out and visit places. And one of the places he always loved going to was this place called Bradaradlana. Bradaradlana is the hot spring. Wunyus call it Paralina, but to us, the Yorubichi for it is Bradaradlana. And that's where a fire stick was thrown into the water, into the spring water, and made it boil up, and you can see the steam coming off it today. That's one of the sites now where the 4-mile expansion is taking place. And as a community, we're powerless to stop it. So Bradaradlana now is being consumed by what these white fellas want to get out of the ground, and they're getting their way, pretty well unopposed. The other site that they're looking at is Mount Gee. Again, Mount Gee, when we were kids growing up and we used to go out and visit that country, Mount Gee to us represents the Vapradla, or the head of one of our largest, most iconic creators, Ridley Morana. So that's Ridley Morana's Vapradla. That's his head. And now these mining companies, so that they can go ahead, forge ahead with their mining, they're proposing to drill a tunnel through Mount Gee. So they're going to put a tunnel right through Ridley Morana's Vapradla. Where else would they get away with doing that to people and desecrating their spiritual sites? In Australia, they can do it because it's only blackfellas. Well, to us, that's our law, that's our creator. It's our land. Even though for the last 200 years we haven't owned it, it's never been returned to us. It's never been handed back to us. It's always been stolen country. Ever since the Wunyus came in, it's stolen land, and it's still stolen land. But now that's not enough. That stolen land now is also desecrated land. In the 1980s, I went with a group of school kids, our own Yuriyakatis from one of the local schools. we took a heap of these kids up to this place called Kakadu. None of us had ever been up there before, so it was a real eye-opener for us. These kids were up there as part of an Aboriginal studies camp, and they'd only ever lived in their own country. None of us, we'd never lived anywhere else. So when we went up to Kakadu, one of the things, of course, that was put in our face, you know, given to us to talk about and think about, was go and have a look at Ranger Mine, go and have a look at the way they've gutted that land. Go and listen to the traditional owners talk about how it's affected them and how it's affected their community. And what have they gained from it? And so it threw up a lot of stuff for us because we knew we had this uranium in our country too. And all these kids that were on this camp, no matter what we threw at these kids, you know, we said, well, what about employment? Or what about, you know, we might get better roads, or we might get a desalination plant. What about all these benefits that might come? We chucked all of this at these kids. And every one of those kids said to us over and over again, no, our elders would never let that happen. That would never happen because our fathers and our grandfathers are too strong. Our mudra, our spirituality, our connection to the land is too strong. They'll never let that happen. But then what happened? In the 1980s, along came the mining companies, Heathgate Resources. Along came Native Title and royalty money. And yeah, you know the rest of the story. Those old people got rolled. Those old people had the people from the mining company put their arm around them and say, hey, we don't need your young people. You just deal with us straight. We're Christian people, just like you. And we'll do you a good deal. We respect you, you know. We're all grown-ups here. They rolled those old people big time. Those old people thought they were going to become rich. They thought they were going to have new motor cars every year. They thought they were going to have a flash house to live in. Now they're still living the same way they were 15 years ago before that mining company come along. And a lot of them are worse off. And a lot of our people have died from sicknesses, from hanging themselves, overdosing on drugs, killing each other. We're not any better off, we're worse off now. And that's what I think back now to the 1980s when we went up to Kakadu and where we had that talk with those kids. And now when I see those kids as adults and they look me in the eye, I know the first thing they're thinking of. And I know how they must feel. They feel betrayed. They feel like the old people have stabbed them in the back. They feel like the mining company have come and just parted us up. And like one of my uncles often says, if those old people that are already gone before us, if they knew what we were doing today, just giving away that country, they'd be turning in their graves. And that's how I feel too. But I know that the mining companies are sweet talkers. They've practiced what they do over and over again. We heard from the people from Papua New Guinea. I've heard from people from the Philippines and from Navajo country over in Nevada and Arizona. The mining companies are so good at what they do. They know how to work people over. They know how to divide communities up. And it's very frustrating. It tears your heart out. Like I've often said to my own mother, I wish sometimes I couldn't see, I couldn't understand what's going on. I wish I could just keep these blinkers on and pretend that everything's going to be all right. But I can't. I'm one of those people, if I can see that something's not right, I've got to speak out about it. And I think about things. And when you think about things, it's like you can almost tell what's going to happen or what might happen in the future. And even though you try and forewarn people of it, you try and encourage them to think outside the box, a lot of people just can't do that. So sometimes, yeah, I wish I didn't know the things that I know. I wish I couldn't see the things that I can see. I wish I could be deaf, dumb and blind. So For me, one of the ways that I could deal with that frustration after seeing what's happened over the last 20 years is this is what's led me to write the PhD, because it's telling our story. There are two key chapters in there. One talks about the history of mining and how that's affected our people and our country. Because one of the things that a lot of people don't understand is often it's not just about uranium mining in this spot here, it's about what happened 50 years ago with the coal mining and how that ripped our heart out. And how then, years later, people still remember that. So they think, well, we didn't have any chance then. We never got nothing. We weren't consulted. No one wanted to talk to us. At least now they're giving us a bit of pocket money. Or at least now they're pretending to like us for a little bit. But for me, that's not good enough. That's just asking us to compromise over and over again. When that's our land and it's stolen country. It's never been returned to us. The only time that that land's ever going to be returned to us is once it becomes a waste dump. I really believe that. When they've finished with it, when they've gutted it, when they've contaminated it, when they've pumped all the poison back into the underground water table, and when it's spread all through all the aquifers, then they're going to turn around and say, oh yeah, you can have your country back now. Well, they can stick that. That's not good enough. That's not damn good enough. So for me, one of the things that I've done in telling my story through the PhD, I've also encouraged the elders who have come around and seen that, hey, this isn't what it was made out to be. A lot of those elders now have broken away. They've formed another group that represents the true values and beliefs of the Kamp people, the Ungamutna law. Those old people now, at long last, they've got their own lawyer to work with them and represent them as the law holders. Not as native title holders, but as law holders. But they know that they've still got one hand tied behind their back because of the royalty money. That's the bit that's still choking our people, is the royalty money. And so I feel it's really important that wherever we are, whatever we do as Indigenous people, whether we're here or in another country or another part of Australia, we've got to try and encourage the old people and the young people to work together. We can't do this alone. It just doesn't work. Old people are going to get rolled. Young people are just going to feel betrayed, confused, and then no one wins. So please, think about this seriously. We've got to bring the old people and the young people back together again. That's the only way we're going to go forward with this. Thank you.
You've been listening to Gillian Marsh, Adnyamatnu woman from South Australia.
And that concludes our second report in the series. This audio will continue next week with other speakers from the Breaking the Nuclear Chain Forum at the Defending Indigenous Rights, Land, Law and Culture Gathering held in Mumpantwe, Alice Springs on the 6th to the 9th July. I'm Jessica Minchell.
And I'm Tessa Dowdell. We've been The Third Degree, so tune in again next week. And of course, keep listening for the lovely Wendy Collis, who's coming up next with The Daily Show. See you later.